Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host, Brandon Perkins, and joining me as always is Teresa Sammons and Chris Logie. Say hi to the good folks out there.
Hello.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while. Teresa's been gone away from us for a little while, but she is back now. She's got stories to tell. Yeah, so this episode is going to be for April 29th, 2022, last show of the month. When we talk to you guys again, we will be in the beginning of May. So I don't know about you guys, but where I live, it seems like we just completely skip spring altogether.
We haven't, and everybody's complaining about it, and I'm like, what the fuck do you want? It's not supposed to be 80 right now.
Yeah. It's been like 85 to 88 over this past week. So
yeah,
we're going up and down.
Yeah. Which on the one hand is, you know, great because it means, you know, the fucking pollen shit is over with more or less. So I don't have to worry about that. On the other hand, it means that I'm going out and coming back soaked to the bone from the humidity, even though we're not even into May yet. So, yeah, so much fun. So very much fun. This week, among other things, a very reviled former politician finally kicked the bucket this week. We got some more or less good news about COVID, but there is sort of a catch to it. The FDA is proposing the ban of a certain kind of cigarettes. It's probably the one you're thinking of. A bunch of states are pissed with the United States Postal Service because they decided to, we'll tell you, and it's a generally pretty good idea, but they're pissed off at them because, well, remember who our Postmaster General is, and he's intentionally doing everything he can to sabotage the entire organization. Oh, yeah. And, of course, if you probably, unless you've been living under a rock, you know that Twitter now has a new potential owner. I say potential because, despite how much talk there's been, he might not actually go through with it, and we'll tell you why. And, of course, we got a bunch of entertainment news as well, including an official trailer for a new Disney film based on a property we all grew up with, you know, if you did the Disney Afternoon like we did. And, that's that and more on this week's episode of Last Weekend. So, start us all off, as we always do. Let's talk a little bit, more or less, about all the stuff we've been doing leading up to today. And we'll start with you, Chris. What have you been doing this week?
Just been dealing with things.
Yeah.
Weather's been very much bouncing up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's about 70 right now. But we've been having the last few nights, like, frost warnings.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes down into the 30s before it goes back up, though it's been in like the 40s or 50s the last few days, so we're still in spring here, or what you could call that these days. But yeah, for things I've been doing, not really been watching too much, but I did get to watch Russian Doll, at least season one.
Mm-hmm.
Season two is out now. I just started that, but first season, really quite good. It is a time loop show where basically this woman, Nadia, sort of gets killed by this vehicle as she is sort of searching for her cat that got lost and disappeared and doesn't look, you know, left or right. She's crossing the street and gets killed by a taxi, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then wakes up at the start of this whole series here, where it's basically she is at the her birthday party that's at her friend's place. And then as she goes, she finds that trying to figure out like what's going on, how to potentially break the cycle, and it gets really weird at times in some fun ways. So that's kind of the big thing that's going on. Finds out that maybe there's other things going on here. Who knows? But yeah, it's a fun time. The second season takes it to a bit of a different thing. It's not a time loop, mm-hmm. necessarily. She finds that a train, and she's in NYC, so one of the trains apparently transports her 40 years in the past. And she's dealing with all the shit that goes with that. She can go back and forth, so it's kind of a wild thing. So it's a whole neat thing. Looking forward to watching more of that, but I'm just got to the second episode, so I don't really have too much to say about season two, but first season's really good.
Yeah.
Let's see. As for games I've been playing, I've been playing more Rocket League. They just started their spring event kind of thing that has a new mode called Knockout.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty neat for what it is. It's kind of like an eight-player sort of fighting match, essentially, where it launches people into this weirdly designed arena that people can kind of do moves to try to knock others out of the or off of the stage. And sort of I guess like a Smash Brothers-ish kind of faction, you have the means of kind of getting back onto the stage of sorts. You can kind of land on the sides and drive up. You'd have, you know, your jump moves and all that kind of stuff that can give you opportunities to get back on. So it's kind of a weird mix of like Rocket League and maybe Smash Brothers in a weird way. Though some of the matches I've had, it doesn't really do a great job of explaining how it works.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of gives you like one screen of text and then quickly moves you to the game in a sort of way that kind of needs a better kind of onboarding process, because it's pretty easy to kind of get confused with it, but it's pretty neat for what it is. So looking forward to put some more time into that. Also been playing more Fortnite, just working my way through the quest and all that, so not much to say there, but I did get Nintendo Switch Sports, which is out today. Mm-hmm. The latest iteration on Nintendo's like Wii Sports franchise.
Mm.
And yeah, it's pretty good for what it is, but they made a lot of weird decisions. So the character creator is much worse than what you had on the Wii for Miis.
Mm-hmm.
You basically don't have very many options to choose. And especially things like a lot of your accessories and facial feature kind of stuff is very limited. And there's a lot of stuff that requires you to unlock things to wear. You know, things like glasses and facial hair you have to unlock.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of just weird. And you only have like six styles of hair. You have to unlock that. I think even their eye colors and some other stuff that's unlockable in a way. Oh, that's kind of just weird. So it's kind of very bare bones in that. But if you like the way your Mii looks, you can import a Mii, or you can make one in the settings of the Switch and just use the head for your character's head, which looks as weird as you would expect to have like a Switch level of graphical fidelity kind of body.
Yeah.
With a Wii Mii kind of face on it.
Mm.
But you've already seen one weird dude that made a version of like Peter from Family Guy.
Of course.
I was like, oh, this guy shouldn't be on my team because I hate him already. But so people are already figuring out how to do weird things to get it into the game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those unlockables, you can only do that stuff through online multiplayer.
Mm.
As far as I've seen, some people I've seen say if you don't have Nintendo Switch Online, you can just play the online mode solo. It's not really multiplayer. I think you're just playing against AI, and you can unlock that way. But it's a whole weird thing. Mm. But you can, there's an online mode that just has places to match up with other people to play the six games. There's local multiplayer if you want to do that. You can also have an online mode just with friends. So you essentially set up a room and they'll see it if they look on their friends list in the game. It'll show us like there's a room there kind of thing, so people can jump in that way. But I think that's limited to 2 people total. It's kind of weird, but yeah, it's got some weird stuff. I'm hoping that they expand it. They do say that there's every time you kind of level up in the game of sorts, you get a pick of items to unlock, or at least they have like collections of items, and it picks a random one from there.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of just you keep picking the same one. You'll eventually unlock everything, but they say they're going to add more every week. New ones, there's 2 up right now, so decent amount of stuff to unlock right now. But yeah, that's largely it there. It's pretty good for what it is. But yeah, the character creation stuff's just kind of bare bones, more than it should be. There's more options if you make a me face than there is with the modern looking faces. So that's kind of the disappointing part, but that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Teresa?
Yeah, Teresa, tell us. Tell us all the stuff you've had to deal with.
Oh, I couldn't possibly remember. well, we are still dealing with my 17-year-old cat screaming every 2 hours at night. And yeah, so the guys are going down to Kentucky to pick up a kitten. We went to like the Humane Society. And they said, keep in mind, I've had cats for 28 straight years. Like, my entire adult life, I've had cats. I fucking know what I'm doing here. You know? And I've fostered a lot and you know, done kittens and bottle babies and all that. So this little girl who a week ago worked at Starbucks and now works at the Humane Society was like, well, we looked over your application after they had us wait for fucking ever, because they're like, you have to put in an application just to see a cat. Okay, fine. Annoying, but fine. And there was one that, you know, my husband wanted to look at. We put in the application. She's like, we talked it over and we feel like you shouldn't get another cat. We don't want to adopt one to you because your cat is so old. If you bring another cat home, the stress could kill her. And I'm like, she's never lived by herself. You don't fucking know my cat. You don't know anything about this. So then they're like, well, I guess we'll show you this one. And it wasn't the one that, you know, my husband wanted to see. So he was pretty pissed about that. And then our kid thought, oh, hey, this cat's really cool. Let's take this cat home. And I'm like, no, totally not attached to this cat at all. And it was also a little too skittish to live in a condo. Because, like, every time a goose flew by and honked, or a plane flew by, which is every 45 seconds, whenever we're on the flight path, we get, like, 6 weeks on, 6 weeks off. Anytime anybody walked down the hall, the lawn care people came by, this cat would freak the shit out. So that, no, it wasn't going to work. So that happened, and then we looked at some other ones, too, in other places, and you know, they're like, oh, yeah, this cat's really loving. And the cat fucking took a big chomp on the woman's arm, like wrapped around and bit real deep. And I'm like, no, we're not doing that either. So anyway, my mom has some kittens from an alley cat that she took in when it was pregnant. And they're now weaned. And she's getting that cat spayed and then putting it back out behind the church that she found it at. Yep. It's that way. So she does the trap neuter release and we'll take this little kitty. So fingers crossed that like she doesn't test positive for feline leukemia or feline AIDS, because that would not be good. Yeah, it's and like Scott saw this video of this woman who was in the drive-thru at Taco Bell and there was a kitten that just walked by and she picked it up and took it home. And he's like, I thought it would be like that.
Yeah.
Maybe not. So yeah, we've been doing that and I've been working and we're also like in the like end game for, you know, our kids' freshman year and the AP test shit and final concert happened for band and all that stuff. Have I talked to you guys since I went to Miami Beach? Yeah, I did, right? Because I told you guys about the guy jacking it in the middle of the day on the street.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Clearly, that's like my top Miami Beach, South Beach thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we finished up a lot of the stuff that we were watching then, and we started looking at some more. I'm pretty sure you guys already know I've been watching like What We Do in the Shadows. We haven't watched the movie. Yeah, so we're slow rolling the TV series because I really like Matt Berry, and I also don't want this to be done. And Scott went back to the office, so he has to go into work now. After 2 years, he has to go in 3 days a week, and that cuts into our lunchtime viewing. So everything's going to slow down a lot on watching stuff. But we did rewatch Kiki's Delivery Service, and I guess that's the first time Scott's ever watched it all the way through. But he was high as fucking balls, and he's like, I did not catch half of that movie. But we've been watching more old Looney Tunes again, because that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been playing entirely too much of Stardew Valley. But for like the past 3 days, I've been trying to do this one Kingdoms Two Crown Challenge Island. It's the Dire Island, Dire Wolf Island. And I'm trying to do it as Shogun and with only single player. And I can't get gold on it. So, and I keep getting pissed off, but I keep trying. And other than all the other weird ass shit that's been going on that I can't remember, I honestly think that's pretty much the highlights, except for like the weather, which does kind of oscillate between 70s and even an 80 degree day, and then back to the freeze advisory. But for the most part, we're hanging out between 45 and 60, which is, I mean, that's spring, right? That's spring, and it's raining like fucking crazy. And I tested negative for COVID, so it's definitely allergies. But all the people around me are falling like dominoes with COVID. So, and somebody called this an invisible wave, and it seems about right. I do entirely expect it to happen. You know, our kid is going to school and not wearing a mask, so all that comes home. And, you know, Scott's wearing a mask at work, but those other fuckers aren't, so it doesn't really matter. And, you know, like, we went out and had pizza the other night, and we were sitting in that restaurant for an hour while we waited for a deep dish pizza. So, you know, shit's gonna happen. I don't know. I don't know if I'm even gonna sweat it anymore. I mean, we've done our vaccines and everything. We'll think about a second booster. But I guess I'm with the rest of America just kind of throwing up my hands going, if it happens, it happens. Kind of a weird place to be.
Yep.
So, well, what have you been doing, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I finished Elden Ring. So that's, you know, in the past. So I've basically been trying to find some way to fill the void after that game was done. Because it is 100% right now my game of the year. And honestly, I don't necessarily see anything coming forward that's going to top it, at least not yet. But in the meantime, I've been reading, I've been playing a bunch of other stuff to try and fill the void. I've been playing some old stuff like Dragon Age Inquisition and, you know, Dead Space, stuff like that. I also played Weird West, which is a game I've talked about on here before. It's a game that was made by some of the old figures from Arkane Studios. So, you know, it's got that kind of you know, if you played Dishonored, it's, you know, or you know, Deathloop, those guys. A lot of them came from that particular studio, and it's got sort of some of the guts of those games in that it kind of works through a sort of you know, total simulation type thing that those games do. But the difference is that it's all isometric, and as you can probably guess from the title, it takes place in a sort of alternate version of the Wild West, which is basically like if Basically, imagine if everybody, once they started crossing the Mason-Dixon, they suddenly discovered that the western half of the country was overrun with Lovecraft monsters. And you basically have Weird West. And it's divided up between a group of like five or six different, different protagonists that you end up playing in the game. And it's definitely one of those games that, you know, it's a lot more complicated than it looks at first because, yeah, you can actually do more than just, you know, go around and shoot dudes. Like, you can actually do stuff like, you know, kick down barrels and, you know, choke dudes out into, you know, unconsciousness and stuff like that. Theoretically, you can go through the entire game and not kill a single person. Yeah, that didn't work for me. So, yeah, a lot of dead people. And on top of that, I've also been playing Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire, which is the sequel to Pillars of Eternity. And it takes place out in the middle of... it's a lot more sort of like sea and sailing focused than the first game was. So, you know, you still got all that isometric RPG goodness, but there's also a lot of you getting in on a ship and going around to places and occasionally having to do ship-to-ship combat and stuff like that. Haven't really gotten that far into it, but it's definitely a lot of fun. I'll say that much. Other than that, just the usual, like books and music. Discovered a band that I'm kind of shocked I hadn't heard about before because of how amazing they are. A band from the early 90s called Jellyfish that I was absolutely horrified that these guys never got as big as they did. They were like a power pop quartet that came out right around the time that... They came out like right around that weird point where like alternative rock hadn't transferred completely over into grunge yet. So,
The Counting Crows age.
Yeah, Counting Crows and REM, you know, those guys. So they were kind of, you know, they had sort of a bright sort of neo-hippie image, you know. And then, you know, Kurt Cobain decided to have a pep rally in a school gym and, well...
The rest is history.
Yeah, Nirvana, let's just say Nirvana killed a lot of careers. and Jellyfish was one of them. But, I do know that the dude who was, like, the frontman for them, he would eventually, like, move over to Japan, and he would start writing songs for Puppy AmiYumi. So, as for books, I have been reading, amongst other things, this amazing book by Rebecca Roanhorse called Black Sun, which is basically, the guy who told me about it sold it to me as, imagine Game of Thrones, but if it took place in pre-Columbian America. And, yeah, that's basically what Dead Sun is. It's a fantasy world that's based on pre-Columbian Mesoamerica. Huh. And it's pretty damn good. No joke. I can't even begin to hope to tell you what the whole plot is because it, much as the case with Game of Thrones, it is encyclopedic and exhaustive. So, yeah, all I will say is highly recommended. Get it if you can. As I said at the top of the show, Georgia has apparently skipped spring entirely because we went from days where it would get to like a high of around 75 or 77 to days where it would get up to around 87 or 88.
That's too hot. Too soon.
Yeah, especially for April. Like, I know, you know, it's just like we're like 48 hours from it rolling over into May, but still. Yeah, that's some serious bullshit right there.
Yeah.
That's pretty much been me. Awesome. Anybody got anything they want to talk about before we move on?
Actually, you mentioned books, and I don't remember how I found out about this, maybe another podcast, but there's a book by a person named Maya Kobabe, and it's called Genderqueer, a Memoir Paperback, and it's a really cool comic novel that basically talks about, you know, childhood growing up and it's really neat to read somebody else's experience. And I was especially interested because this person happened to go to a Waldorf school and Waldorf High School.
Mm-hmm.
And we had done that a little bit in preschool. And I could definitely tell by the artwork and the styling, just really very creative. And also some comments about, you know, math and science and tech not being super strong. I was like, okay, that's really interesting. But it was a nice quick read. So, you know, if it's like at your library or something, I mean, it's not that much money. But
for sure, it might be at the local Barnes & Noble. I might just go over there and read it there.
Yeah, it's not a long read at all.
It's like 240 pages. It's not...
Yeah, it's quick. So that was pretty interesting in, you know, just finding out about the things that other people have to deal with that, you know, a lot of it I, in particular, take for granted. So it's been a long time.
You know, Waldorf schools, you don't read a whole, you don't learn a whole lot about math, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic, but you do draw lots of stuff involving crystals and gnomes. So.
And you can fucking sew.
Yep.
That's for sure. So, yeah, pretty neat.
Yep. All right. Well, then, moving on from there, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And this week, I thought we would talk a little bit about probably one of those writers that... You know, she is incredibly, like, she's known for having one work, but the fact is she was a fairly consistent and prolific author during much of her career, and she wrote about a dozen or so books during her entire career as an author, from, you know, novels to travelogues, stuff like that. And she's famous for the fact that she's sometimes considered to be the grandmother of science fiction. But what people don't realize is that she isn't just the grandmother of science fiction in one sense. She's also the grandfather of science fiction in another sense. And I'll explain. We're going to talk a bit about Miss Mary Shelley, who I think everybody who went to high school will probably know her as the author of Frankenstein, or The Lost, or, it's alternative, you know, it's alternative name, The Modern Prometheus. Now, obviously, anybody who's ever read the original book, the original novel, will know that the actual story is pretty different from pretty much every film version you've ever come across. Usually in the movies, he's portrayed as like a big, dumb hunk of flesh that he, you know, is getting chased around by people with torches and stuff. And, you know, he can't really say anything. He's just, and he walks around with like his hands out like a zombie or whatever. Of course, in the book, he's nothing like that. He's, first of all, he's not, his name isn't even Frankenstein. Frankenstein is the name of the doctor. I know it's the most common fucking trivia question in all fucking, you know, culture, but it needs to be said. The actual creature in the book does not have a name. Also, furthermore, he is not stupid either. He is actually very intelligent. He can speak fluently. He is basically driven by an existential dread because he is something that was born out of various different pieces of humans into a single creature. And so he has this sort of crisis of identity and, you know, all that stuff. So everybody knows about that. So, you know, with that, you know, you've got, you know, stuff like, the concept of using, you know, what was then hard science into something fantastical that then brings up philosophical ideas about the nature of science and whether or not all, you know, are there certain things humans should and should not do, et cetera, et cetera. But here's something a lot of people don't know about this, about Mary Shelley. After Frankenstein, she continued writing several other books. She wrote, for example, a historical adventure novel called Valperga, which was published in 1823. She also wrote a romance called The Fortunes of Perkin Warbeck, And a bunch of other stuff too. She also wrote in, she also contributed to other stuff as well. But a lot of people don't know is that she is also arguably the grandmother of the post-apocalyptic genre as well.
Hmm.
Yeah. See, after she published Frankenstein, and she went through a few other books. She wrote a book called Mathilda. She wrote a book called Prosperine, which was a play for children. And of course, the as well as another play called Midas. And then, of course, the previously mentioned Valperga. She published a novel in 1826 called The Last Man. The story basically is about, it sort of goes like this. It's just in the most generic sense. It concerns a Europe in the late 21st century that is ravaged by a mysterious pandemic illness that rapidly sweeps across the entire globe, ultimately resulting in the near extinction of humanity. Yeah, sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
But, so, basically, the sort of plot goes like this. And it, first of all, for, like, one of the things that a lot of early, late 17th and early 18th, 20th century fiction tended to do is that there was usually this weird sort of conceit where the author, before they started writing, when they started the book, they would usually talk about how, like, yeah, I was, like, out and about and I came across, like, this series of papers, or I talked to this person who told me this story, or something like that, meant to sort of give it a kind of credence to the idea that it was almost supposed to be nonfiction, but it's actually just fiction. This was partly sort of a thing that started way back in ancient Greece and Rome, where travel writers would just completely make up random shit and then claim that all of it was true. It was just kind of a conceit that a lot of writers would do afterwards. But essentially, what happens is that in a 20th century, it essentially goes like this. So the story is sort of told sort of autobiographically by a figure named Lionel Verney, who is sort of a male stand-in for Mary Shelley herself. And it essentially the story itself begins in 2073, and then the story ends in 2100, which is when the writer himself begins writing this book. And of course, the funny thing, of course, is even though this book is supposed to take place near the end of the 20th century, it's still very much supposed to be the world of the early 1800s. So basically, at this point, the world looks very similar to sort of what Britain at that time looked like. Britain is still a monarchy. They've been at war with various places like the Greeks and the Ottomans. There's some intrigue going on with the Austrians. And then suddenly, right around, let's see, it's right here. During all this is happening, suddenly people begin talking about a plague that's happening. And the plague itself is never, like, really explicitly described exactly what its nature is. The way it's described is it could kind of be like a combination of, like, cholera, which, if you know anything about the Victorian era, cholera was, like, an epidemic in the United Kingdom for many, many years. Until, Jon Snow finally discovered that, it was being spread by the fact that, their water supply just so also happened to be involved with their sewage supply.
Yeah.
Yeah. But basically, it's like a combination of cholera and the pox. And suddenly it makes its way into England around 2073. Lionel and some friends of his during the plague learned that a friend of his has been captured by the Ottomans. And so they're trying to go to Greece, where his friend is originally from. And they're in Athens trying to negotiate his return because, taken captured, he's hostage. Because remember, this is like nobility type stuff. We capture one of yours, you're going to give us something in return that time. Both of them decide to then go back to the Greek army because they were fighting for the Greeks for their independence, sort of like what Lord Byron was doing at the time.
Hmm.
And he meets a friend of his named Evadne, who's dying from war wounds. She gives prophecy about this guy's death, a prophecy which confirms, you know, his own suspicions. And it's right around that time that the plague finally sweeps into Europe and the Americas. Around 2092, there's reports of a black sun that causes panic throughout the world. For those you don't know, in the ancient world, black suns, of course, were an eclipse, right?
And
yeah, in the old days, an eclipse was usually like an omen of doom. Now, at first, England is thought to be safe. Because, you know, they're the English. They're, you know, reasonable and, you know, clean. You know, not like those barbaric southerners and those weirdos over in America. No, we clean. And but then, no, the plague reaches then. Eventually it ends up even claiming, like, the royal family. And so they end up electing a Lord Protector. Which, if you know, those of you who aren't familiar with, you know, English history, Lord Protector is the title that Oliver Cromwell took upon himself during that brief time when England became a republic after the death of Charles I. Unfortunately, he's completely unprepared for the plague, so he hightails it out and flees northward, eventually dying by himself in like a bunker with some of his provisions. One of the guys we talked about earlier, who's a friend of Lionel's, he ends up taking power. He sort of begins to restore order, but unfortunately, he can't really do much because, again, summer after summer after summer, and the plague just keeps going on. Eventually, there are ships that show up in Ireland to try and take survivors from to America. Who are carrying survivors from America, who then begin plundering Ireland and Scotland before invading England itself. Eventually, there's a war that starts. And eventually, by the end of it, England itself is just completely exhausted and destitute. There's only a few people left over, and they decide it's time to just go search for an easier climate. So they get ready for their departure to Dover. They have to face like fierce weather, you know, stuff like that, en route to France. Eventually, they make their way to France. Unfortunately, by this point, a lot of the other immigrants fleeing the plague into France have already divided themselves into various factions. Amongst of them is a fanatical religious sect led by a false messiah who claims that his followers will be saved from disease. Now, Adrian, you know, Lionel's buddy, he manages to unite most of these factions, but this group eventually decides, no, we don't really like Adrian, fuck you. Lionel then sneaks into Paris, where the cult has settled, to try and rescue a friend of his named Juliet, but she refuses to leave because the imposter has her baby, the imposter, of course, being the Fox Messiah, but she helps Lionel to escape after the apostle's followers imprison him. Later, while Juliet's baby sickens, Juliet discovers that the imposter has in fact been hiding the effects of the plague from his followers. She is killed while trying to warn the others, after which the imposter commits suicide, and his followers return to the main body of exiles at Versailles. With the story ending, it eventually ends like this. The exiles travel towards Switzerland, hoping to spend the summer in a colder climate. By the time they reach Switzerland, all but four of the original survivors, Lionel, Adrian, Claire, and Evelyn, have all died. They spend a few relatively happy seasons at Switzerland, Milan, and Como before Evelyn sadly passes away from typhus. They all attempt to sail across the Adriatic Sea to Greece, but a sudden storm destroys the boat and drowns both Clara and Adrian. Lionel swims ashore at Ravenna, fearing that he is the last human left on Earth. He follows the Apennine Mountains to Rome, befriending a small sheepdog along the way. A year passes without anyone else entering Rome, and Lionel resolves leave with his dog and live the rest of his life as a wanderer of the depopulated continents of Africa and Asia in search of other survivors. The story then closes in the year 2100.
Dang.
Yeah. Remember, 1826. is one that's published. Now, scholars have pointed out a lot of like biographical elements that one can directly attribute to some of Shelley's own life and the people that she knew. Shelley had been forbidden by her father-in-law from publishing a biography of her husband. For those of you who don't know, her husband was Percy Shelley. So she memorialized him, among others, last man, the utopian Adrian, the guy we talked about earlier, who leads his followers in search of a natural paradise and dies when his boat sinks in a storm, is basically a fictional portrait of Percy Shelley himself, although other minor characters such as Maribel Bell traces of Percy as well. Lord Raymond, who leaves England to fight for the Greeks and dies in Constantinople, is based on Lord Byron, because that's exactly what happened to Lord Byron. After, you know, the group, after Shelley had published Frankenstein, Byron had decided he wanted to go somewhere and do something great, you know, not just be a lord. So he went to the Greeks and decided to help the Greeks fight for their freedom from the Ottomans. And he ended up perishing in a battle in Constantinople. And, you know, of course, the novel expresses Shelley's pain at the loss of her community. Because if you remember, you know, the Frankenstein, its original writing, it sort of came about because, you know, her and Shelley and Byron's current girl at the time were all together in a castle, and they decided they were going to have fun by writing a ghost story, and that's how Frankenstein came to example.
Yeah.
It also talks a lot about the failure of romantic political ideals, because remember, this is 1826, it's after the end of the French Revolution, and the you know, the Reign of Terror and the rise of, you know, Napoleon Bonaparte. And, of course, all the responses that had happened to it from, you know, the likes of the Godwinian, the Wollstonecraftian, and Burkean responses. Attack, you know, stuff like that. And also about isolation and science and medicine. When this book was published, it was a goddamn disaster. The critics hated it. It did not surface again until the 1960s. Two editions of it were published in London on January 23rd, 1826. There was also one published in Paris. A pirate edition was even printed in America in 1833. It received the worst reviews of all of Mary Shelley's novels. Most reviewers derided the very theme of lastness, which had become a common one in the previous two decades. Individual reviewers labeled the book sickening, criticized its, quote, stupid cruelties, and called the author's imagination, quote, disease. The reaction startled Mary Shelley, who promised her publisher a more popular book next time. But nonetheless, she would speak towards the end of her life that The Last Man was one of her favorite books. It would not be reprinted until 1965. It has now received new critical attention because now the notion of lastness has become even more relevant. Yeah. Yeah, so that was The Last Man. The fact that Mary Shelley was not just the grandfather of both science fiction and arguably the modern horror genre, she also is the godmother of post-apocalyptic literature.
Yeah.
And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah.
Dang.
All right. With that out of the way, it is now time to start the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with the assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is, of course, the Mango Mussolini himself, Donald Trump, who was declared to be in contempt of court by a New York judge for failing to produce docs for a subpoena from the state's attorney general. He now has a $10,000-plus-a-day fine until he actually shows up with the documents. He also tried to appeal it. That appeal was denied.
Yeah. Yeah, they are looking for these details for their case against him.
Mm-hmm.
Letitia James's case. But yeah, he's decided to say no. And now he's going to rack up more debt.
Mm-hmm.
So good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, there's really nothing else to it. He's got to pay up, but I mean, as we all know, he has a record of just not paying his debts at all. So,
yep.
Yeah. In another case of just Florida slowly descending into straight up anarchy, A Florida sheriff encouraged homeowners to shoot intruders to save the taxpayers' money.
Yeah, which is not how that works.
Yeah.
No.
And plus, if you shoot them in your home, then you're going to likely have, you know, blood stains and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
If it goes through their body, you know, damaging your own house.
Yeah. And you can still be charged with manslaughter.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know that, but if a person breaks into your home, depending on the circumstances, the cops can charge you with manslaughter.
Yeah.
Now, you may still later be declared not guilty, and it can be ruled a justifiable homicide, but you're still going to have to go to court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy, Santa Rosa Sheriff Bob Johnson, discussing the arrest of Brandon Harris. Man who was wanted on multiple warrants. I was leaping fences, breaking into houses before ultimately jumping headfirst out a window where he was apprehended. But yeah, he noted that in one of the four houses Harris broke into, homeowners shot at him and missed. The sheriff had a message for that person who had not come forward. I guess they think that they did something wrong, which they did not. If somebody is breaking into your house, you're more than welcome to shoot them in Santa Rosa County. We prefer that you do, actually. So whoever that was, you're not in trouble. Come see us. We have a gun safety class we put on every other Saturday.
Yeah.
If you take that, you'll shoot a lot better, and hopefully you'll save the taxpayers money.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's not the purpose for those classes.
Yeah.
Those classes are to show you how to effectively use a firearm so you do not accidentally shoot yourself or someone else.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I guess he got invited onto Fox and Friends.
Because of course he fucking did.
And he said, I'm a cop, not a politician. If somebody breaks into your house in Santa Rosa County and you shoot and kill them, the chances of them reoffending after that are zero, and we like those odds.
Fun thing about sheriffs in the United States, they are in fact elected.
Yeah, and we see what kind of shit's been elected recently.
Yeah. I'm a cop, not a politician. Yeah, but you're also elected.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see, Fort Lauderdale attorney Jason Blank said there's no requirement that they be armed before someone can exercise the right to defend their property. Let's see. I cannot agree with the sheriff that it is ever preferred to shoot someone. It's wildly irresponsible because it essentially encourages people to use deadly force without giving it more consideration. There's often times that somebody is not an imminent threat to you. As Jude Facciodomo, president of the Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, says it was reckless for Johnson to make that such a proclamation and to cite the benefit to the taxpayers in shooting first and asking questions later. Sheriff Johnson just turned Santa Rosa into the Wild West. Maybe one less sheriff's salary is a better way to save taxpayers' money. So, yeah. There you go. Another dumb sheriff.
Yeah.
We really got to do something about the whole, like, electing sheriffs thing. Like, I'm not saying they shouldn't be elected, but we should probably set up some standards that they have to abide by before they can run for election.
Like passing standardized tests?
Yeah.
Like, if your ACT was below 25, you need to have X number of hours of education?
Yeah.
Before you can run?
Yeah.
You know, maybe some vision tests, cognition tests. I think that could be really good for a whole fucking lot of things in life.
Yeah. And finally, our last asshole of the week is Kansas State Representative Cheryl Helmer, because there was an email to a grad student that she released that ended up being made public this week, showing her transphobia about using restrooms with a trans colleague. It was actually so bad that even the fucking Kansas GOP was like, yeah, this is pretty unfortunate.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's them being tolerating of it.
Yeah.
Democrats condemned them. The state's leading LGBTQ rights lobbyists said it was a new level of toxic bigotry. Helmer's emailed remarks to a University of Kansas student subsequent interviews about Democratic State Rep. Stephanie Byers, who is the one that is transgender there.
Yeah.
Yeah, which this all sort of overshadowed GOP's attempt to override their governor Laura Kelly's veto of a bill that would ban transgender athletes from girls and women's K through 12 in college sports. And yeah, that bill ended up, or the attempt to override the veto ended
up
failing, passed the House 20-10, but they were one vote short in the House to complete the override.
Yeah.
So luckily it's not going to happen, though.
Yeah.
They're going
to shouldn't have gotten that far, but yeah.
Yeah.
By one individual's conscience, we managed to have something this horrible not get passed.
Yeah, but that's not going to stop them. They'll try again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this woman here, let's see, Stephanie Byers said, "We know this has been going on in offices and back rooms and conversations since the day I was elected. The shocking part is that it came out, that someone actually said it."
Mm-hmm.
Helmer stood firmly by her comments while defending a bill she co-sponsored that would make it a felony for doctors to provide hormones or do gender transition surgery for children under 18. She also said she worried about the safety of young children who visit the state house and cried what she called an in-your-face approach to promoting transgender rights from Byers, the state's first elected transgender lawmaker. Yeah, she's 70 years old. Also tried to make a point when she mistakenly entered a men's room in the house in early 2021.
Oh, she's one of those bitches, is she?
The men, she said, were surprised and upset, so she asked them how they would like it if a woman regularly used their restroom.
Like I said.
Yeah.
She's one of those bitches, isn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, press on the issue Monday evening, she said parents shouldn't be allowed to change their child's gender. As she says here, you can't lop a penis off and then expect, you know, a little boy to now live his life. He'll be in regret for the rest of his life.
Also showing that she doesn't know how the process how it's done.
Yeah.
You don't just go over there and the doctor just chops it off with like a meat cleaver or something. No.
And they don't start handing out hormone suppression or hormone therapy without extensive medical and psychological counseling.
And I mean, pretty sure that they don't actually start administering the hormones until a certain age.
No, that's not accurate. Not anymore.
Either way, it doesn't matter. The point is, this bitch is ignorant and...
Yeah,
so let me see the email. Let's see here. Yeah, 25-year-old University of Kansas grad student Brennan Riffle. She said, "Now, personally, I do not appreciate the huge transgender female who is now in our restrooms in the Capitol." Riffle here describes himself as trans feminine and uses the pronouns they, them. Releases the email to the Kansas Reflector, a nonprofit news provider.
Is she also prejudiced against like 6'5" women? Because there are assigned female at birth people who are well over 6 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. And she's freshly elected in from 2020, I believe, was her first.
Yeah.
Freshly so. Fuck off, too.
Yeah.
Sorry, I have very little filter today.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's another one. Also in her email. "A doctor can inject meds and dilute, but cannot destroy what God has done in the perfection of the..." It's all quotes, human, or all caps, human being.
Yeah, she might want to just do some cursory reading on, like, first year biology, because that's not how that works.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah. Anyway, so, moving on from there, we have our heroes of the week to sort of wash that bad taste out of our mouths. And the first one, our hero, is Miss Melissa Lucio, a woman who has been very unjustly imprisoned and was actually set to die this week. But a Texas appeal court orders her stay of execution to review her case. Now, for those who want to know how this happened, Melissa Lucio was a woman who had a 2-year-old child. And somehow, the 2-year-old child fell down the stairs, or somehow, and it ended up being a fatal injury. And the woman Miss Lucio herself, the mother, was then charged with murder and I think child endangerment and something like that. There was this really dodgy prosecutor that was involved. Some very clear evidence of judicial misconduct. And she was about to be set to be executed this week until the appeals court finally stepped in and ordered a stay of execution.
Yeah, it's believed that the confession was coerced out of her.
Yeah.
Who had pleaded for most of the time that she did not do it, a 5-hour interrogation.
Yeah, see, that those things about interrogations, though, is that they're specifically designed to slowly wear you down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, until she eventually said, I guess I did it.
Yeah.
When she was asked if she was responsible for some of her daughter's injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Our legal team says the problems with Lucio's prosecution continued at trial, where they argue the jury heard unscientific false evidence that misled them into reaching a guilty verdict.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Melissa's entitled to a new fair trial. People of Texas are entitled to a new fair trial. Yeah, that's hopefully yeah. She gets the...
Should not have gotten that fucking close. But
yeah, no,
yeah. And finally, well, as far as heroes of the week, President Biden, our other hero of the week, has announced his first actions on clemency with 3 pardons and 75 commutations.
Yeah. Let's see. Pardons include Abraham Bolden, the first Black service Secret Service agent to serve on the presidential detail. Always maintained his innocence, arguing he was targeted for exposing racism and unprofessional behavior.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was shocked but appreciative when he received the phone call that morning.
Mm-hmm.
He was, in 1964, accused of attempting to sell a copy of a Secret Service file. A first trial ended in a hung jury. He was convicted during a second trial despite witnesses admitting to lying at the prosecutor's request.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. He also pardoned Betty Jo Bogans of Houston and Dexter Eugene Jackson of Athens, Georgia. Both served time in prison for non-violence drug-related offenses.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they are... people were sort of disappointed that Biden has been kind of slow to grant clemency and shortened sentences on this stuff, but you know, they're starting it now.
Mm.
And it seems like part of the potential legalization of marijuana would definitely be to get people out on nonviolent drug offenses.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that all goes through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with that out of the way, it's time to go from the show proper to the proper show proper. And we start off with this story. Former Senator Orrin Hatch is fucking dead.
Yep.
Yeah. Just read us his list of offenses.
He championed GOP issues like abortion limits.
Uh-huh.
Helped shape the U.S. Supreme Court, defending Justice Clarence Thomas from against sexual harassment allegations during the confirmation hearings.
Yep.
Became an ally of Donald Trump.
Uh-huh.
As well as chairman of the powerful Senate Finance Committee to get a major rewrite of the U.S. tax codes.
He's also the guy who convinced him to get out of the Paris Climate Accord.
Yeah, Trump helped him in return by agreeing to drastically downsize 2 national monuments that have been declared by past presidents.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he decided not to run after doing all that again because he faced a tough primary battle and had promised to not run again.
Mm-hmm.
That allowed Mitt Romney to run to replace him.
Mm-hmm.
And now he is a shitty person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who is, you know, currently campaigning against any sort of loan forgiveness, school loan forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And he's never had to worry about money in his life. He's very wealthy and all that. Let's see. Hatch is also noted for his side career as a singer and recording some music with themes of his religious faith, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yep, Orrin was a Mormon.
Ah, yeah. I do remember that.
Oh, he also co-wrote a song, I think, for the soundtrack for one of the, I think it was one of the Stuart Little movies.
Huh. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even joking. Look it up.
Random, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess one of his few good things he's done, he worked on a bill back in, I think it was the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
That helped pave the way for generic medications, so there'd be cheaper options out there for people.
Unfortunately, he's also the guy who helped create the spread of dietary supplements.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he was also a chief opponent of Obamacare.
Yep.
So there you go.
Yeah, definitely recall that part.
Mm-hmm.
One of his songs, Unspoken, went platinum after appearing on Wow Hits 2005.
Yeah.
Of Christian pop music.
Yeah, Wow was basically the Christian alternative to Now That's What I Call Music.
Yeah.
Right down to basically having a very similar name.
Yeah.
Because like with all Christian media, it's just one letter away from something else that it's basically ripping off.
I mean, they stole all of their fucking holidays from pagans, so why not keep stealing?
Yep. Yeah. Moving on from there, CNN obtained over 2,000 text messages that Mark Meadows had received on January 6th, and they've been playing them all week long.
Yeah.
And it basically shows that, they were all in on it, every goddamn one of them.
Yep.
Yeah, let's see if I can... Yeah, many of Trump's family, Ivanka, Jared, Don Jr., as well as White House and campaign officials, cabinet members, Republican Party leaders... January 6th rally organizers, Rudy Giuliani, Mike Lindell, Sean Hannity, and other Fox hosts.
Hannity in particular is all over that shit.
Yeah, there's also text exchanges with more than 40 current and former Republican members of Congress, including Ted Cruz, Jim Jordan, Mo Brooks, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who said she hadn't texted him. She gets a very weird, maybe coincidental way that she maybe didn't declare martial law because she misspelled Marshall.
Yeah, because of course she fucking did. I mean, were it anybody else, I would have given her the benefit of the doubt because, you know, autocorrect does weird shit, but you know what? It's her, so fuck her.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's see. Here's one of her texts at 2:28 p.m. on the day of. Mark, I was just told there's an active shooter on the first floor of the Capitol. Please tell the president to calm people. This isn't the way to solve anything. It's like, oh, when she gets a taste of what she's helped create, she's like, please stop it. Let's see. Mick Mulvaney, Mark, he needs to stop this now. Can I do anything to help?
Yeah.
Let's see. Barry Loudermill.
There was a bunch of others, but I think the big one that really sort of took the cake was Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah. Let's see, where's that at in here? This doesn't have many of the texts. I think they're working on various articles to highlight stuff.
Like we said, it was over 2,000 of them. So they got a lot of information to sift through, and they're slowly putting them out into the public. But
I did see the Sean Hannity ones, which are pretty good, because on the day of the election... Sean's like, oh, here's what's going on North Carolina. And it's like, Trump's up. And it keeps going, Biden's up. And another one, Biden's up more. And they're like, this is bad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is good. So I'm realizing it's turning against them.
Yeah.
That other bullshit is catching up to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, keep an eye on CNN for that stuff because they post them here and there.
Yeah, they still got more to talk about. But like we said, it shows that every goddamn one of them was in on it in one way or another.
Yep.
And that they're all lying through their goddamn teeth when they're trying to claim that this was somehow Antifa or BLM.
Yeah.
Because, like, some of them explicitly are pointing out, no, this is Trump supporters. Saying it, even.
Yeah, there isn't that much Trump merchandise for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now for some COVID-19 news, which you may have noticed we've basically not had much over the last few months. This week, Dr. Anthony Fauci announced, or basically said, I don't want to make it out like he was just saying this when talking with someone.
I think he was interviewed or something and asked about it.
He said that the United States is now out of the pandemic phase of the COVID-19 pandemic, but there is a catch to it. And it's probably the catch you're probably thinking. Basically, now it's going from the pandemic phase to the endemic phase, which means it's now going to start becoming a sort of regular thing that we have to deal with, sort of like the flu. But that doesn't mean you need to let down your guards just yet. So, Chris, if you'll explain.
So he was on PBS NewsHour saying we are certainly right now in this country out of the pandemic phase.
Yeah.
And that we don't have 900,000 new infections a day and tens and tens and tens of thousands of hospitalizations and thousands of deaths.
Mm-hmm.
We're at a low level right now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're saying, are we out of the pandemic phase in this country? We are. But yeah, you talked to NPR after this, saying that he wanted to clarify what he called some maybe understandable misinterpretation of his remarks.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm referring to is that we are no longer in the acute, fulminant, accelerated phase of the outbreak. We're in a somewhat of a transitional phase where the cases' numbers mm-hmm. have decelerated, and hopefully we're getting to a phase of somewhat better control, where we can begin to start resuming more easily normal activities. The United States and the entire world are still experiencing a pandemic, but there are different phases of the pandemic, and what we are in right now is somewhat of a transitional phase of mm-hmm. the accelerated component into hopefully a more controlled component.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, talking about some things here, yeah, saying the CDC is saying now that about nearly 60% of people in the U.S. and about 75% of children 11 and younger have antibodies,
mm-hmm.
have gotten COVID.
Yeah.
Have antibodies in their blood, which is a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
About 66% of the U.S. population are fully vaccinated.
Yep.
And of that number,
it was higher before. It had been getting close to 60 until they changed the definition to, you know, having the both shots and the booster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. I said I'm virtually certain that we are undercounting the number of infections in the U.S. because many people are experiencing only mild or no symptoms.
Yeah.
Part of that dynamic is that people aren't getting tested as frequently now. Fauci said if they test positive without showing serious symptoms, they might not be reporting it to local health agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Despite a recent rise in COVID-19 cases, including a recent positive test for Vice President Harris, he reiterated that hospitalization rates are rising only slowly.
Yeah,
unlike during the surge driven by the Delta variant.
Yeah, this is the BA.2 variant that started. That was the one that had started sweeping across Europe and everything, and people are like, oh, holy shit, the thing is shooting up. It's like, again, as he points out, it's slow.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite the catastrophe you think it is. And we're all far more better equipped to deal with it now than we were even this time last year. So,
yes.
Yeah. But the unfortunate thing is we had the means of actually minimizing it greatly, and
because guess what happened?
Trump and his whole, it's gonna be gone by Easter.
Yeah,
it'll just disappear as it gets warmer.
Mm-hmm.
Easter 2030.
Mm. Yeah, eventually, what we do, I do think one of the things we have to normalize in this country is something that people like in Southeast Asia have been doing for years now, which is if you get sick, if you get the cold or get the flu, just go out if you have to go out somewhere, just go out wearing a mask.
Yeah, right. I tested this week and I didn't know if I was positive or not.
Yeah.
And I was negative and I didn't screw around with anything like the antigen. I went straight for PCR. And you better fucking believe I was wearing my mask.
Yeah.
And I was trying my best to get, you know, my kid to wear a mask too. So I'm like, look, I don't know if I have it. If I have it, you could possibly be carrying it around, but you know, you can do the best you can. I mean, there's a lot of ways and places that masks are going to be extremely beneficial. We're not going to be getting rid of ours. You know, especially if like right now there's norovirus going around here and, you know, I'll still wear it in stores and whatnot to try to keep me from touching my freaking nose, you know, with my hands while I'm shopping. Because that's, you know, that's a vector of entry.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're not bad.
Yeah. And, you know, because over, like, say, Japan, for instance, like, it's so much of a trope over there now that it's basically like a running gag. You know, suddenly one of the cast members shows up wearing a mask and everyone's like, oh, crap, this guy's sick. Act accordingly. Well, that's what we need to start doing that over here.
Yeah.
And people will, like, get the ideas like, okay, person wearing a mask, they're probably sick with something, so I should act accordingly. In other medical news, the Food and Drug Administration is proposing a ban on menthol cigarettes.
I was afraid you were going to say it was menthol.
Yeah. It's menthols.
Yeah, the proposal has the potential to significantly decrease disease and death from tobacco.
Yeah.
By reducing youth experimentation addiction.
Yeah.
Help prevent children from becoming the next generation of smokers and help adult smokers quit. Additionally, proposed rules represent an important step to advance health equity by significantly reducing tobacco-related health disparities. Yeah, they're banning menthol-flavored cigarettes and all cigar flavorings, except for tobacco flavor. The proposed standards are based in clear science and evidence that establish the addictive nature and harm of the flavored products. The proposal builds on the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act, which banned cigarette flavors, aside from tobacco and menthol, in
2009.
Yeah, especially menthol cigarettes were advertised to black people.
Oh, yeah.
Many, many years.
Yeah, and it is, you know, smoking and lung cancer is still, like, one of the leading causes of death in the African-American community. So, yeah. Cannot wait to see these go. Frankly, I can't wait to see the tobacco industry and in general just die a miserable, miserable death. But, you know, baby steps, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says here, a spokesperson for tobacco company Altria says the proposal will push the products into, quote-unquote, unregulated criminal markets that don't follow any regulations and ignore minimum age laws.
Yeah, you fuckers already do that. So,
I mean, hello, bowling alley cigarette dispenser when I was a kid, because that's where we all got it, or the corner store where, yeah, I'm buying this for my dad.
Or it's, you know, the convenience store where the guy's got Lucy's in a jar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on from there, 16 states have all sued the United States Postal Service over its plan to buy gas-powered trucks instead of electric.
Yep.
Because, again,
fucking to joy.
It's hell world, and we are all living in it.
Well.
Yeah, let's see. The three separate lawsuits filed Thursday by the states and environmental groups in New York and California asked judges to order a more thorough environmental review before the Postal Service moves forward with the next generation delivery vehicle program. Because they were initially going to go with electric, I believe. They're like, we'll go with the fuel stuff.
Yeah, because our Postmaster General is a goddamn sociopath.
Yeah. Yeah, attorneys general from 16 states, 14 of which have Democratic governors, sued in San Francisco. A separate lawsuit by the Center for Biological Diversity, Earth Justice, Clean Air Now, KC, and Sierra Club was filed in the same venue. And another was filed by the Natural Resources Defense Council and United Auto Workers in New York. Let's see, what states are these I mentioned? Let's see. States that are that suit are California, Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Maine, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington. So there you go.
Now, next up in international news, Emmanuel Macron wins re-election in France's presidential election. He was going up against Marine Le Pen.
A Nazi.
Whose father is also a Nazi.
Yeah, she's one of Putin's Nazis.
Yeah.
She's like Trump.
Yeah. And pretty much the reason she lost is because pretty much the entirety of the French electorate that was outside of the far right basically united against her.
Yeah, he got 58.5% of the vote.
Mm-hmm. Compared to hers, which was like, I think it like 41, 42.
Yeah. Which, yeah, is a great sign because obviously people don't like Macron because of his mask mandate policies and that stuff.
Also because he's just kind of a centrist douchebag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a weirdo.
Yeah.
He married his childhood teacher.
Yeah, but this is France we're talking about.
Yeah. But he's also like about 40 years old and has step grandchildren as a result.
Again, this is France we're talking about.
I'm saying
pretty much all Protestant sexual mores go out the window once you step foot into France.
Yeah, that still doesn't mean it's not weird.
Oh, it's still weird, but it's also France.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they,
even with that, even the fact nobody likes Macron, they still all got together and voted for him anyway because they were like, yeah, we don't like him, but at least he's not a fucking Nazi.
Yeah, though she won more districts than she did last time around.
Yeah, which is troubling. It's also fairly goes together pretty fairly with like a lot that has been going around in Western Europe recently, unfortunately. The good news, though, is that this time she did not win.
Yeah.
The bad news is she might win next time.
Yeah. And that's why she was saying that she considers it a victory.
Yeah.
So, yeah, France can't sleep on this shit.
Yeah. Also, a fun fact about France, you know what they have that America also
has? What?
An electoral college! That's right!
Yay.
Where do you think they got the idea from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. All right, now for this other story that everybody has been talking about all fucking week. Elon Musk finalized his deal to buy Twitter for $44 billion.
And he's been very weird about it since then?
Yeah, tell us about
it. So this isn't his money he's using.
Yeah.
He's getting the money from, banks and such, essentially.
Yeah.
Putting the money into him because it's likely any money they give to him invest into him will accrue. So there's that. But he was on like Twitter, like joking, like, oh, I'm gonna buy Coca-Cola and put the cocaine back in.
Which yeah, is, like, that did happen.
Yeah, he's not gonna. One, they're not gonna put cocaine back into that shit.
Yeah.
You can only wish.
Yeah. And two, he's just a fucking idiot. Now he's basically. Today especially, been like, I'm only on the right because of liberals making fun of me.
Yeah.
You're on the right because you're a fucking right-wing idiot.
Yeah. Right? He's and like, you benefit financially from it.
Yeah.
All these people are like, oh, I supported Obama, so I can't be an asshole.
Yeah, you sure can.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty easy for everybody else.
Yeah.
But yeah, it still seems like it's very much maybe not going to go through, but
it's been kind of sort of teetering on the balance pretty much all week, which is really funny because once the announcement went out, there was this gesticulation of happiness from the right wing going like, yay, we're going to be able to take Twitter over again. And then it started to trickle out that, oh, right. First off, this thing isn't actually set to actually happen officially until the end of the year, meaning that he can't actually do anything right now. And two, it might not happen at all now because after the whole sort of announcement sunk in, Tesla shares basically sunk to over $125 billion in value.
Yeah, they lost $125 billion in value.
Yep.
That's a lot of money.
And remember what Chris just said. He's getting all this money from bank loans.
Yeah,
it's not going to get approved.
Yeah. And the banks are probably going to look at this and go like, yeah, we're not sure we're going to get as much of a return on our investment as we previously thought.
And part of this issue is that the market has had Tesla overvalued for a long time now.
Yeah, because he infamously manipulates its stock price. It's it's been an open secret for like years now.
But Tesla's value is basically about as much as pretty much all of the major car manufacturers combined. Mm-hmm. Which is like, that's not how it is in reality here.
Yeah. Look, I know there are a lot of Teslas out there, but pretty sure there aren't as many Teslas out on the road as, like, say, Ford or Chevrolet.
Not by a long shot. No.
And I mean, look at like the shit that he's pulled when trying to build like a loop and tunnel specifically for Teslas.
Or he tried to reinvent the subway.
Yeah, yeah. There's no way it's like as valuable.
No.
As he claimed. Yeah. Well, it's not, but anyway, that's besides the point. Go on, Chris.
Yeah, he also, like 2/3 of his wealth is in Tesla stock, so that's sort of part of his net worth there. So I think he is putting in to sell like $8 billion of his stock to help fund the Twitter acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, I think that's going to happen here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're still kind of waiting on what the hell this out? When this is all going to fall out?
Mm-hmm.
Either happen or just sink.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because his Tesla shareholders are not going to like losing so much of their value.
Yeah,
because he is not, at least publicly, so focused on Tesla right now.
Yeah. Now that doesn't still mean that there's still a possibility that it'll still go through. This is Elon Musk we're talking about. And never bet on the idea that Elon is necessarily always a rational actor.
Fair point.
But his odds are right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, So, moving on from there. Over in Egypt, because, the tourism industry and stuff has sort of taken a serious hit from, COVID and everything. One of the byproducts of it is that it's allowed archaeologists to do a lot more work than they previously had been able to. Much more effectively because they don't have to, deal with a bunch of dumbass tourists trying to take pictures and selfies and shit. And one of the things they did is they discovered an ancient temple for Zeus in Egypt.
Oh.
Yeah. And it'll explain how that's possible. Because I'm pretty sure this particular temple dates to around the time of the Roman era. Or at least, tell them.
Well, this wasn't necessarily discovered. It was known to kind of be there, but just nobody has had the time to really look into it. Because they tried to do some excavations at the area back in the early 1900s when French Egyptologist Jean Claudat found ancient Greek inscriptions that show the existence of the Zeus Cassios temple, but he didn't unearth it. According to the Tourism and Antiquities Ministry in Egypt. These temple ruins were found in the Tel El Farma archaeological site in northern Sinai, known by its ancient name Pelusium. This dates back to the late Pharaonic period. Was also used during Greco-Roman and Byzantine times.
Mm-hmm.
There also remains dating to the Christian and early Islamic periods as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Archaeologists excavated the temple ruins through its entrance gate, where two huge fallen granite columns were visible. The gate was destroyed in a powerful earthquake in ancient times.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, the ruins were found between the Pelusium Fort and a memorial church at the site. Let's see, they found a set of granite blocks probably used to build a staircase for worshippers to reach the temple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Zeus, Cassios is a conflation of Zeus, the god of the sky, in ancient Greek mythology, and Mount Cassios in Syria, where Zeus was worshipped.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing of, like, you know, them combining gods and stuff was pretty typical for polytheistic empires in general. Greek, and, you know, Rome was pretty common. Because basically what would happen is all these, you know, they would encounter these other societies that were also polytheistic, and they would usually find, like, things that are in common with their own gods. It was like, oh, we got this guy, and he's the god of fire. He's like, oh, we also have a god of fire. Maybe they're the same guy, or maybe they're different. It's fine.
Yeah. And they said they found inscriptions in the era to show that Roman Emperor Hadrian renovated the temple. And so they're going to study the unearthed blocks and do a photogrammetry survey to help determine the architectural design of the temple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool.
Now, of course, Hadrian's primary legacy, of course, is Hadrian's Wall.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was involved in a lot of architectural stuff during his reign. So the idea that he would, you know, order a renovation of this temple is pretty in line with what we know about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Moving on. Yeah. Moving on from there, we're now going into the entertainment part of the show. And the first story, entertainment, is Justin stepped down as director of Fast X days into shooting.
Yep. He announced, about a week and a half into shooting, that he says here, over 10 years and 5 films, we've been able to shoot the best actors, the best stunts, and the best damn car chases.
Mm-hmm.
On a personal note, as the child of Asian immigrants, I am proud of helping to build the most diverse franchise in movie history. Forever be grateful to the amazing cast, crew, and studio for the support and for welcoming to the Fast family. Let's see, with the support of Universal, I made a difficult decision to step back as director of Fast X while remaining with the project as a producer. Hmm. So they have basically put the filming on pause for now to find a new director. So yeah, this is, I think, one of two movies are kind of filming close together so that they sort of finish out this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's directed 5 of the movies.
Yeah.
Tokyo Drift, and then, what is it? Fast and Furious, Fast 5, Fast and Furious 6.
Mm-hmm.
And then returned to helm of F9.
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty deeply tied into that series legacy. So, yeah.
And it's one of the most diverse franchises around.
Yeah, no kidding. Not just in casting, but in fucking plot.
Well, I'm just talking about casting.
Well, yeah, but yeah, also in plot too. Like, this is a franchise that started out as like a movie about underground drift racing, and then look at what it turned into.
More street racing.
Yeah. All right. Next up, Kite Man will be getting his own HBO Max series as a spinoff of Harley Quinn.
That's hysterical. Totally.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Yeah. The Harley Quinn show is amazing. It's hilarious.
Yeah, we haven't finished yet. We have got to finish because you're right. It is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll focus on Kite Man and his new squeeze, Golden Glider.
Mm-hmm.
They moonlight his criminals to support their foolish purchase of Noonans.
Mm-hmm.
Gotham Sidious Dive Bar. Matt Oberg will reprise the role of Kite Man. It's a 10-episode order.
Mm-hmm.
And executive produced by co-creators of Harley Quinn.
Mm.
So there you go.
Yeah, I love how part of the fun of the series of that series is that they just take back a bunch of these like weird obscure characters from DC's history. And yeah, Golden Glider is definitely one of those people, as is Captain Kite. Yeah. So, I said Captain Kite. I meant Kite Man. What the hell?
That's all good. We knew what you meant.
Yeah. Next up, Sony reveals the El Muerto villain. Famous Latino musician Bad Bunny.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this is a weird character to pick.
Yeah.
It makes sense for the actor they have.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is big into wrestling and was even at one of the WWE events doing some wrestling and surprised people that he wasn't too bad on that. Mm-hmm. But El Muerto is a, as you can probably guess, a Latino wrestling character that only appeared in two issues.
Yep.
That's it. Known as Juan Carlos Estrada Sanchez in the comics. He's a wrestler whose powers are handed down by ancestry in the form of a mask that gives him superhuman strength. But yeah, I guess he wrestled him in the ring. Wrestled Spider-Man in the ring. And yeah, that's pretty much it. It was like a two-part issue, two-part little series there. So I guess throw another one on the top there.
Yeah.
They got Madam Web. That is happening next year. Kraven the Hunter. And yeah, now El Muerto. And probably, I think they confirmed a new Venom. So there you go.
Yeah. All right. And next up, HBO is developing a series based on Dave Eggers' novel, The Every. Now, for those who don't know what The Every is about, it's basically a science fiction book about a global sort of company monopoly that started. It tells the story of a woman named Delaney Wells. She joins a company called The Every, which is a company that was formed by a merger between The Circle, which was like a tech giant, and an e-commerce giant known as The Jungle, which is a very, very thinly disguised version of Amazon.
Gee, this is so unrealistic.
Yeah. And basically, she decides, you know what? Too powerful, so she's going to try and take down the company from within.
Yeah.
What's also unique is that, consistent with sort of the plot of the book, it's not easy to buy new versions of this book on Amazon. When the hardcover was published, he did not allow it to be sold on Amazon. It was only sold through independent booksellers.
Okay. That tracks.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be a half-hour comedy series.
Yeah. Because it's a pretty comedic book.
Yeah. Let's see. That's about all the details here. But yeah, Eggers will serve as executive producer. So there you go.
Yeah. Moving on from there, Netflix canceled Space Force after 2 seasons.
Damn it, I didn't know that. Oh, I really like that show.
Yeah.
Now I'm pissed.
Well, it's also, you know, Netflix is going through some shit right now.
Yeah, I know. We actually, I should have brought that up in the update. After, when was 2014? That many years ago, we dumped Netflix this month. Consistently, we've been subscribed to them. And, their penchant for killing off their original series pisses me off. The price hikes really piss me off, but the playing around with IP logging and then blocking. I couldn't watch when I was on, well, if they had their way, I couldn't watch when I was on vacation in Florida. That is the straw that broke the camel's back right there. Yep. So, yeah, fuck them. I dumped them. And I picked up YouTube Premium, and I'm liking that a lot more than I thought I was going to.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that show is officially dead. And finally...
maybe someone else will pick it up.
HBO Max is still out there. See, kind of the thing with Netflix is that they're not the only down anymore, and they are definitely suffering because of it.
Yep.
Yeah. And finally, last story for the night, we got an official trailer for the film Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, which, if you have seen, it looks like a goddamn fever dream.
Yeah, it very much reminds me of maybe like a mix of Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Pop Star Never Stop, Never Stopping, I think is the title.
Yeah, the Lonely Island movie, yeah.
Yeah, because it's about the Rescue Rangers kind of being an actual show that happened.
Yeah.
And they joke here, when you think of Chip and Dale, you think of these guys, right? And they show the Chip and Dale's dancers. And I go back to like, oh, no, we show we had back in the day. We were on top of the world and all that. And they show lots of references to various other shows, Disney and Fox and others as well. You see the candlestick from Beauty and the Beast. As well as some other characters in here. And yeah, they're trying to find, I think, the... What is it, Gadget?
Yeah.
I think she has gone missing after the others have kind of gathered together for that. And yeah, there's kind of a lot of wild shit going on here. Seth Rogen plays like a generic dwarf from like Lord of the Rings, something like that, whose character model doesn't actually move when he's looking around. Stiff model. They have a funny bit where he played Pumbaa on the live-action Lion King. That character runs into the dwarf. And so you got Seth Rogen laughing at Seth Rogen. Which I'm sure is part of the joke there. But they run into a Peter Pan-like character. I don't think it's actually supposed to be Peter Pan. That seems like a potential bad guy in this and all that, so... There's lots of fun playing around with the various parts of this kind of animation history. Especially because I think one of the two, I forget whether it's Chip or Dale, that gets the CG surgery to turn into like a CG version of their character. So one's in kind of a like 2D animation kind of thing. Though I think it's all 3D anyway. It's just shaded like it is 2D animation.
It's like cel-shaded.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, the list of voice actors in this is ridiculous. John Mulaney, Andy Samberg, Kiki Lane, Will Arnett, Eric Bana, Flula Borg, Dennis Haysbert, Keegan-Michael Key, Tres McNeil. Tim Robinson, Seth Rogen, J.K. Simmons, Chris Parnell.
Nice.
A lot of people in there. It seems like it's poised to be a surprisingly good movie. It's only on Disney Plus, and it's going to be out May 20th, so about 3 weeks from now.
Okay. Yep. And that's it. We got ourselves a show, folks. We're good. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, a comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And so we are going to go ahead and wrap it up here. As always, our thoughts are with the people of Ukraine and Russia. Also, even though, as Dr. said earlier, while on the downturn of this pandemic, we still very much encourage you to get vaccinated if you have not been vaccinated yet. And if you have been vaccinated, if you have not yet been boosted and feel like it's something you might need, please do not hesitate. Considering right now they're extremely easy to get. So you don't really have much of an excuse. And, I would like to thank Chris and Teresa for joining me tonight. Join us next week when we will have more just unmitigated looniness from the world. And we will see you all again then. Good night, everybody.
Good night.